Welcome to A Lunch with Biggie, a podcast about small business and creatives sharing their stories and inspiring you. My guest today is a video journalist, multimedia reporter, as well as an author, co-host of a popular show, Bungalow We're in the Bus, currently also the chief marketing officer for DeWitt Law Firm. Please welcome John Busdecker.
What's going on, John? How are you?
What's going on, man?
I'm glad to be here.
I know.
I've been telling you for years that I would come do this.
You have?
And then I broke your heart a little bit.
A few times.
Because I keep saying I'd come out here, and then I finally did. So I'm here.
No, I appreciate it. All right. I absolutely love it. I appreciate you taking some time in your busy schedule during my lunch break. What's your usual go-to lunch or sandwich?
Oh, we're just going to get right into it.
We're going right into it.
So so those are two separate questions.
Yeah. Well, I mean, and I kind of leave it open-ended so that way if you have particulars, I mean, it doesn't, and obviously because everyone assumes that I'm going to put you in a box and make you pick a sandwich.
Uh-huh.
So that's the reason why.
I was thinking about that on the way here, too.
I know. So that's the reason why I say lunch or sandwich, because I'm open to other food items. So you can give me, like, if it's not a sandwich, it's this.
So I'll say this. So we'll take that as two separate questions.
Okay.
What's my typical lunch? Typically, my lunch is almost what I had for dinner the night before.
Yep.
Because it's just my wife and I. And so a lot of times we'll make like a lot of food.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll have leftovers on purpose. So instead of making a little bit of pasta, we'll make a lot of pasta. So she can have leftovers. I can have leftovers.
We do the same.
So a lot of times it'll be whatever I had the night before or maybe two nights before because we had it for dinner.
Yep.
But let's say that didn't happen. Let's say I don't have leftovers and all I got is like sandwich stuff at the house. I will make sandwiches at home. I go home for lunch most days. So I work downtown Orlando.
Okay.
And my office is right downtown. But I live about 10 minutes away in College Park, which is just northwest of downtown Orlando, if you're not familiar. And so I go home almost every day because we have three dogs, my wife and I. And so I have to go let them out and they run around. And so I typically try to get home at some point. So that's where I usually eat lunch. So if I have, if I don't have leftovers and I have like sandwich stuff, generally, you know, two pieces of bread, you know, turkey, cheese, lettuce.
If you have it.
If I have it. Yeah. Mustard, mayo. I like banana peppers a lot.
Okay.
I'll throw banana peppers on there. And yeah, that's usually what I have. And I usually toast the bread too. Or if I don't have like lunch meat, I generally have tuna fish. So I make a lot of tuna fish sandwiches too.
Okay.
Yeah.
Curious, your tuna fish, do you add, besides the typical mayo, maybe a little relish or something like that, do you add anything else like mustard or anything like that?
Not mustard, although I should try that.
Yeah.
But that's a good idea.
Yeah.
Generally like a little bit of paprika,
uh-huh.
a little bit of garlic,
yep.
salt and pepper,
yep.
and I don't use relish.
Okay.
I generally chop up pickles.
Okay.
Because
Same
I,
idea.
Because I don't always have relish.
Yep.
Plus I don't like the sweet relish in tuna fish.
Okay.
And then celery as well. I'll chop up celery. And onion and sometimes apples.
Oh, you're really going. You're like, that's a very intense. Okay, so I'm. I'm not. This whole episode is not sandwich related. So, but I do.
I'm out of here. No, I'm just.
I do have a question on that.
Uh huh.
Thoughts on tuna melts?
I don't. I've probably only had a handful in my life. They're good. I just won't.
I don't typically. That's the reason I'm asking.
I want hot tuna.
Yeah, that's usually like I'll toast the bread.
Yeah, I'll toast the bread as well.
But I won't do. I'm not usually like tuna melt. Like,
but
I'm
had not, one time. I was up in Michigan and we got off a plane and we had to get something to eat and I think my wife got one and it was really good.
Yeah,
it was really tasty. But I would probably never make that at home.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. And being from Michigan,
mm-hmm.
I always like to ask this because everyone always like when they look at my shirts and stuff, they're always like, "Well, why don't come? You don't have." Michigan, Detroit, Michigan, none of those. They do not have an official sandwich,
not a sandwich.
Because all I ever hear is Coney dog.
Yeah, and I actually have a shirt that has a Coney dog on it that says Detroit on it. And if you're not familiar with that, it's a hot dog with chili, mustard, and onions, but it's like a special kind of chili. And you don't eat it with a fork and knife. You're supposed to pick it up. It's not like that sloppy.
Yeah.
But they're really good, and they're kind of everywhere. In especially Southeast Michigan, like around Detroit area, a lot of Euros are around Detroit, just because there's a lot of Middle Eastern people that live in Southeast Michigan.
Yep.
I know when you get up north, it gets into like the pasties. I didn't really have those growing up because it's more of like a Upper Peninsula thing.
Okay.
Technically not a sandwich probably, yeah. But kind of maybe in the family.
Yeah. In the handheld world.
But as like a sandwich that's from Michigan, I'd have to think about that.
Because the only other thing I could think of is that I think of Detroit style pizza is like another, like that's a known
square deep dish.
Which I think I prefer over Chicago deep dish just because I don't think it's as heavy as a deep dish. But aside from all that, I've known you. I was thinking about this as I was researching because you and Leanne moved in 2010.
Yeah.
And you started working at the Sentinel.
That's where I started. That's why I moved here to Orlando.
That's right. And I think that's actually how I became to know you I may have even been towards the end between your transition of Sentinel to going to WESH that's when you started kind of doing the whole multimedia journalist stuff.
Yeah. And I moved to WESH in 2016.
Okay.
But I feel like I would have ran into you at some point before then.
We were conversing and meeting because since you were doing so many different videos. So one of the things that I've noticed through your looking at LinkedIn and looking at all your other things,
I do not update my LinkedIn.
Don't worry about it. Don't worry.
I'm sorry, I have a job. I don't need one right now.
I don't either, but I always like to look just to
see. It's a good way to see what people do.
I just kind of like to look to see am I missing something that I maybe didn't see or know about? Because, I've known you for years now. We've known each other for a while. But one of the things that I've noticed through this is that you have the common thread is storytelling.
Mm-hmm.
You've always been a storyteller. So I guess my first thing is, where did the love of storytelling come from?
Well, I'll go back to when I was in college. So I did good in high school. I was pretty intelligent. I got good grades. I did well on everything. And so I got a full ride to where I went to school, which was in Michigan at Wayne State University. Go Warriors. And I went there, but when I got there, I didn't really know what I wanted to do because I was a pretty good student and I probably could have went into some different fields, but I wasn't great at math, but I was okay at it. So some of those jobs were probably out. And then same with science and biology, I probably could have done okay, but I really would have had to study and apply myself. Yeah. And I wasn't real good about that either. But I was always good at English classes and reading classes. But then when I got to college specifically, they had journalism classes and I really liked those. And so I started taking a few journalism classes. And eventually when you start in journalism, you take news reporting and history of journalism. So you learn about the profession and you do the basics. But eventually you get past that and you start doing other types of journalism, and one of them was called feature writing. And so in feature writing, it's like what it sounds. You write fun stories, feature stories, longer stories, magazine stories. And I really, really like that. And just talking to people and learning about what they do and writing about that. When I say writing, it was writing. It was not it's not what I do now where I shoot more video and I'm on camera. It was writing for the newspaper. So when I graduated with my degree, I tried to find a job in journalism, and eventually I did in Lynchburg, Virginia, and I was a reporter. I was a feature writer. I found a job in feature writing, and luckily enough, I found the job, and I moved, and I got to do that for a few years in Virginia, and then I moved again, and I worked in Alabama as a feature writer, arts writer, feature writer.
Entertainment, right?
Entertainment was the actual thing, but we did all kinds of stuff, and it was kind of there where I started shooting more and more video, because this was about 2008. And so video was starting to get bigger online and people could see it on their phones. And newspapers were trying to get more into video content for their websites.
Yeah.
So they handed me a camera and said, do whatever you want. And so I had to learn how to shoot stuff, how to edit stuff. And it was real, real bad at first. But eventually I got better at it. And I learned okay, if you do this, you can do that. And if you do this, you can do that. And it just sort of blossomed from there. And eventually there was an opening here at the Orlando Sentinel for the job was a multimedia reporter or videographer. Yeah. I don't remember. But I was the first one they hired who was whose job was to write for the paper, but also shoot and edit video. So I would write stories and then I would stop, and then I would go edit a video, which took forever.
Uh-huh.
But it was my job. And yeah. So the first, you know, few hours of the day were going to something, shooting video, taking notes, coming back, writing a story, and then putting a video together, hopefully to get it all done in 10 hours, which eventually, some days I did, some days you'd have to carry it over a little bit. But yeah, I did that for a while, and then eventually ended up at WESH doing like full TV stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And then after that, it's just been all kinds of other videos.
Yeah, but it always still ends up being the story. You still end up being the storyteller. Is what I've noticed in some format or another.
It's funny because like I say this a lot. Like anybody can shoot video.
Yeah.
Everybody has a phone now. I mean, you can shoot video. I can shoot video. Your grandma can shoot video. That's not usually the hard part. The hard part is making it into something that somebody wants to watch. And I'm not saying like, you know, you get video of a crash. That's crazy. Like, okay, people are going to watch that. It's when you take something that's not so crazy and you make it interesting enough to somebody will spend 2, 3, 4, 5 minutes watching the whole thing. And that is sort of a skill. Not everybody does have that. And if you can find people that can, you know, talk to 5 people and interview 5 people and then turn it into something that you're like, oh, like this is really good. And they don't fast forward and they don't skip it. That's a little harder to find.
Yeah. Mm. No, I totally agree with that. I was going to say like, being a storyteller and you obviously working, you know, currently in your current role and then also in the fact of like how you have like, you know, side projects that you've done for working for others. Why do you think it's so difficult for small businesses to actually be able to tell or share their story?
I think the hardest thing is time, because people see what I've done sometimes and be like, that's so good and that's great and we share it and how did you get 20 million views on that video or whatever? Yeah. How'd you get 12 million views on that video? Well, like that video was good but the one I did 10 years ago that you didn't see wasn't so great. It took me 10 years to get to the point where I could make it into something that you would want to actually watch.
Yeah.
And so when it comes to a small business, you know, I would never expect them to just pick up a phone and shoot something and get millions of views. Now, you know, with TikTok and Instagram, it's a little bit different. I mean, those are different kinds of videos.
If
you get somebody on camera who does something and they're fun and they're quirky and they get a lot of views, that's a little different than like storytelling, but mm-hmm. that's fine. I mean, I'm not knocking that because that can generate a ton of business.
Correct.
You know, if you're a pizza place and you're shooting all these videos in your pizza place and they're fun and people like to watch them and share them, that's great. But if you need to like sit down and interview people and it's maybe a really serious topic and like that's a little bit harder to get people interested in.
Yeah.
So I understand why businesses might see that and be like, oh, I can't do that. Like I can't do that. Well, you might not be able to do that. Like, but if you practice at it and you do it a lot, you might be able to do it eventually, but you also might just have to find somebody that can do it for you because it's not an easy skill. So, but it does take a lot of practice.
Yeah. No, I totally get that. I totally get that. You also co-authored, I think now in the third iteration, mm-hmm. I think is where you're at right now, with like 100 things to do in Orlando before you die.
Mm-hmm.
How did that come about for you to be like, hey, I want to do this, is my first question. And then I'll kind of have a follow-up.
So it goes back several years. So when I was working in television, I had known other people that worked in TV. And there's a local anchor. His name's John Brown. He actually works at Fox 35.
Okay.
So John Brown, anchor at Fox 35 for years. He wrote the very first version of that, 100 Things to Do in Orlando Before You Die. So version one. That book and that company that makes that book, they actually do this all around the country. So they'll find some author in Tampa. They'll find one in Jacksonville.
Makes sense.
Find one in Nashville, whatever. Yeah. And so they just contact somebody and they say, you write it, we'll publish it, you promote it, you get a chunk of money, we'll take a chunk of money.
We'll get money.
So that's how that works.
Okay.
No secret there. But so John Brown wrote the first one. And then I don't remember what year it was, 2016, 2015?
Yeah, 2016.
It's been a while.
2016, I think it was your first one.
John was leaving town and he said, hey, I'm moving to St. Louis to go work at this TV station. Would you be interested in doing the next one? Because they want to do a second edition. Sure, I'll do it. And so he had already written the first one, so we took some of that one, and then I got rid of a few things that I thought could be updated, that I thought were cool, that I just didn't think needed to be in another one.
Yep.
So we got rid of some stuff, and so we put that one out together. But by that point, he had already moved away, and so I had sort of taken the reign. But he had written some of it, so we shared
authorship.
So then fast forward 2, 3, 4 years, and that same company came back to me, and they were like, hey, we want to do another one. I was like, all right. So I would have had John Brown do it with me, because I wouldn't take that away from him. Correct. But he had already moved away to St. Louis. He lives here now. He came back. Yeah. But at the time when they needed a new one, I asked Brendan O'Connor, who does Bungalower, and he does the show with me, Bungalower and the Bus, to help me co-author the next one. So that's why his name's on the latest one.
That's what I figured. So that, what is there, like, one of the, like, when you guys go through it, do you guys go through the first, second iterations and then be like, we're going to take these things off, and then, and to then go, okay, let's add something new to it?
Yeah, because, like, stuff closes. Yeah. I mean, believe it or not, things close here in Orlando. Yeah. And so we get rid of those things. And then maybe some things were in the second one that we just, they're okay, but maybe some cool stuff is open since then. So let's add that to it. So there's a lot of things that change and fluctuate. And so we wanted to reflect that. And, you know, plus Brendan has his own ideas of what he thinks is fun to do.
Correct.
And so, you know, I want him to have say in it. Yep. And so there's a lot of things that have to be in there because it's Orlando and you really can't take certain things out. But then there's other things that, you know, it changes over time that can be replaced.
Do you have a top one, or like an underrated place that you're like, people, like, this is like one of my favorite places or things to do in Orlando that is not appreciated enough?
So there's two things that I tell people a lot. And, okay. And I've probably been saying this ever since I started with this project.
Okay.
And my one favorite place to go to is the Pinball Lounge in Oviedo.
Yep.
And if you've never been, it's in a bowling alley, or the Oviedo Bowling Center in Oviedo. And these two guys, Kurt and Ed, opened it up. It's almost been 10 years. I think they're celebrating their 10-year anniversary now. And it's a fun story because it was a bowling alley with a bar that had nothing in it. And so they put all their pinball machines in it. And then the Pinball Lounge got so popular that people were coming out there just to play pinball. And then eventually these two guys bought the whole bowling alley. So now they own everything.
Wow.
And they do events, and it's just a lot of fun. And so I've always tell people, like, go out there and play some pinball. And this was a little bit before some of these other arcades had opened in Orlando. So now there's one on I Drive. There's another one in Oviedo. They have a lot more arcade games, but they really take their pinball serious at the Pinball Lounge. There's, like, really, really old ones from, like, the 60s.
Yeah, isn't it, like, almost like a pinball museum of sorts?
Yeah, I mean, but they rotate them out, and they get brand new ones. They do unboxings. They do, like, theme nights. Like, I know they both really like the band Rush, and there was a Rush pinball release, and so they had a whole Rush thing. And so, like, they really sort of lean into it, which is really cool.
Yeah.
So that's the one spot that I tell people to go to a lot. The other is the Orlando Wetlands Park.
Okay.
Have you ever been there?
No.
So it's not everything I like is on the far east side of town, but the Wetlands Park is it's a water reclamation site for the city of Orlando, but it's like, I want to say 15 or 20 ponds, but it's huge, and there's birds and there's alligators and there's trails, and you can just walk around, and it's just really, really cool out there. You got to go all the way out on 50 towards Bithlow in Christmas, and then you go north a little bit and it's way back in there, but you can park. And you can walk, and you can actually get tours on certain days. They'll take you in, like, a golf cart and, like, tell you all about it. But it's really to filter water from the city of Orlando before it goes back into, like, the St. John's River.
Yeah.
But there's just, like, tons of birds out there, tons of alligators. And, like, if you're walking on the trail, you can see alligators.
I have a friend who's obsessed with alligators.
It's a lot of fun.
I will definitely be telling him next time they come visit, and we may have to take a little trip over there.
It's free. It's all free out there. Awesome. And Gatorland's fun, too. If you've never been to Gatorland, I think sometimes people, when they come here, they go to Disney, they go to Universal. That's fine.
Yeah.
But go check out Gatorland, too. For, like, $22, it's worth it, especially people that don't live here. They're like, oh my God, there's so many gators here.
Yeah, total Florida.
Yeah.
So you mentioned your co-host and obviously Brendan, the Bungalower.
Yeah.
tell me your show's on Real Radio. It's also a podcast, Bungalow or in the Bus. How did all that come about? Like, how did you guys get that started? And then how did it all kind of happen? You know, kind of happen.
So back in 2016, when I was working at WESH, eventually I was let go by WESH. I had a year long contract and my contract wasn't renewed. And so I had to kind of figure out, what do I do now?
Yeah.
And so at the end of 2016, beginning of 2017, it was around that time that something happened at Real Radio, and I don't remember what, but there was like an air, like a time slot that had nothing going on, and it was Friday nights at 9 o'clock, and so they had their normal shows, and then at Friday at nine, they didn't have anything before like the music started, and so I had gone on Tom and Dan a lot. I had gone on the Jim Phillips show here and there. I knew Jack Bradshaw, like I knew sort of those people over there. So when it came time and they were like, we don't have anything in the slot, would you be interested? I think Jack asked me, would you be interested in doing something? And so I was like, well, you know, maybe. So let me figure that out. And so I didn't know Brendan that well then, but I knew him. Like, we had crossed paths a few times, and I read Bungalower, and I think I had written a few stories for Bungalower after I left WESH. And so when all that was happening, I was like, well, maybe you and I do a podcast. Maybe we take the Bungalower brand, which is more than me. Like, you have more power than just my name.
Yeah.
And then we just talk about stuff that is going on. And so we did like two or three just to like make sure we kind of knew what we were doing. And we didn't at first. I probably don't even know now sometimes. But we recorded a few, and they liked it. And they said, that's great. We'll just put it on air. And so for, I don't know, 2-3 years, it was on at 9 o'clock on Friday on Real Radio. And then something else happened, and they had an opening at 8 o'clock. So our show got moved up to 8 o'clock. But since 2017, which is now going on seven, 8 years, we've been doing a show every single week. We typically record it on Thursday night somewhere in Orlando. Lots of times down, like downtown-ish, like Orlando, Winter Park, College Park, Thornton Park, like around the coverage areas of Bungalower. But sometimes we go a little farther out if people invite us or want to have us out there. But yeah, we've been doing it every week for almost 7 years.
And the fun part is the beauty of it is, and just to kind of give people an idea of what the show's about, it's similar to what the Bungalower would be. It's like what's happening in Orlando, you know, things that are going on, what's trending, you know, you're always at a fun place to eat. Sometimes it's a new place. Sometimes it's an old place. Mm-hmm. You know, I've gotten to eat with you guys at some of these places.
We try to highlight different places around Orlando. We take lots of photos. We take lots of video. We get invited a lot. Sometimes people sponsor us, so they'll pay us to come there. Sometimes they don't, and we just eat a bunch. And sometimes we don't know where to go because somebody cancels, and so we end up somewhere else. And so, but at almost every week we are somewhere different. We'll go back to places though too. We have some that we are our favorites, or they'll be like, "Hey, if you don't have anywhere this week, we'd love to have you back," or something's new. And Brent and I, we live pretty close to each other.
Okay.
I live on one side of College Park. He kind of lives on the other now. So sometimes we'll bike places, and so it just sort of depends on both of our schedules.
No, and so you pretty much have now figured out like the ebb and flow of you guys, of how you guys do it.
It's funny though, because like some days we'll show up and be like, what are we doing today? Like Brendan, to his credit, he does most of the work. I usually just show up. Okay. And like, because his job is to operate Bungalower.
Yep.
So all day, every day, he's either writing, reporting, shooting photos, talking to people. I read it a lot. I stay pretty up to date on the Orlando, the world of Orlando, but it's not my job. And so a lot of times he'll show up with all the notes and be like, all right, we're going to talk about this. And then I'll just sort of chime in. But because I sort of read a lot and get sort of involved, I usually know what's going on. He doesn't like surprise me with stuff.
Yeah. I've seen you two in action. You guys, you guys have a good, you know, rapport going back and forth. It's always fun to see you guys and listen to you guys. So, which I appreciate because you guys do such a good show on it. So definitely a fun thing. So obviously besides co-hosting the storytelling, you're now the chief marketing officer for Do It Law Firms. Okay, so I'll be honest with you, like, how did that come about? And two, because I've never, like, I know other law firms have this, but and maybe it's because I know you, so therefore I've seen this and bore, but it's one of those things where it's very intriguing to me of about that aspect of like, because it's very smart on all the things that you do, but how did that all kind of come about? Yeah. Because obviously before that you were storytelling for
sheriff's office.
For the sheriff's office. But I believe that all kind of, and once again, it all comes with the storytelling part, because I believe what happened with the storytelling of that, and obviously it's your story, not mine, mm-hmm. but just so you don't have to repeat yourself, go back forward. You actually, for a little bit of time, you also have like a marketing kind of, you know, production company, right?
That kind of, yeah. Sunny so Orange. When I left television, I sort of had to figure out like, what do I do now? And so I could have found a job somewhere like in another city, probably working at a newspaper or maybe even a TV station. But at the time in my life, I had worked at WESH, which is a large station. If you know how media markets work, Orlando's like 35 when it comes to, it might be 18. It's either 35 or 18. I don't remember, but it's up there.
Yeah.
And so, you know, you're talking New York, LA, Chicago, Boston, DC. Eventually you get to Orlando, and I'm pretty sure it is 18. So, but I only had 1 year in television. So if I was going to go find a job, I probably would have had to go back somewhere and found
another, a smaller like Tulsa, market. Oklahoma,
yeah, exactly. Which
like
is fine. Nothing wrong with that. Nope. But I had already gotten to a point in my life where, like, you know, I'm working at a larger market. I was making a certain amount of money. And so if I would have had to go to Tulsa, Oklahoma or Fargo, North Dakota, it would have been more or less kind of a step back. And so I didn't want to do that. And so I kind of had to figure out, like, what do I do now? So that was when I started just shooting video for other people. So I shot a lot of video for nonprofits and businesses and basically anybody who would hire me.
Yeah.
And part of it was, at the time, I had already been in Orlando about 7 years or mm-hmm. so. And so I knew a lot of people. I had covered a lot of things. And so I had a good network of people. So when it came time to, like, quote unquote, launching my own business, I could reach out to people that I knew and said, do you need any video work? And I just put it out there. I remember when I first started, I literally had nothing, because like the TV station gave me a laptop. The TV station gave me a phone. So I never needed any of that stuff. So when I first started, like, I had to spend $1,000 on a laptop.
Oh, man.
I had to buy a phone. Like, I had to get all that stuff. I didn't have any of it. I didn't even have a camera.
I was going to say, the camera, no? You didn't even have a camera.
I had to tell my wife, like, we need to buy like a $1,000 camera, which sounds like a lot, but when it comes to camera equipment, it's not a lot.
Yeah.
But it was good enough for what I was doing. I didn't need like a $10,000 camera.
Yeah.
Although I look back on some of those videos and they look like trash, but the people didn't mind at the time.
Yeah.
So I remember I had to buy all that stuff. So like before I even did one thing, I'm already dropping $3,000-$4,000 on just gear.
Yeah.
Because I had microphones and tripods and light stands and lights and. So, but I did, because I knew I could make some money that way.
Yeah.
So I was lucky enough that because I knew enough people around town, I could get work pretty quickly. So I did get side jobs here and there, and people would hire me to shoot their video. And I used to tell people, I'm not, if you want somebody to shoot your $20,000 commercial that's going to air, I'm not your guy. Like I'm not going to get that high of a standard. I don't have the gear. I don't, it's me. It's just me. But if you need a video for like $1,000 that you're going to air or show at your gala that you don't want to drop $20,000 on, I'm your guy. And so, and I could churn those out. I can make them. And I was real flexible. And so a lot of places appreciated that, because they knew they would get something that was good. Not Hollywood good.
Yeah. But not Super Bowl quality. Not Super Bowl. But it's also not Super Bowl budget.
Exactly. You know? And also most people were watching on their phone. They're watching it on a TV screen. Like, they didn't need it to be this giant production.
Yeah.
So they were real appreciative of that. And I did well. Like I was always busy. I was always shooting for different people. If I'd shoot for one client, and then that client would tell another client, and then I would work for that person. And then that first client needed another video because like 3 months had passed. And so they needed a new one. And so I stayed real, real busy with that. And I'd travel a little bit, not far, but like, you know, around Florida.
Yeah.
And no, I want to say I got lucky a little bit, but I also knew a lot of people and I just worked a lot. Like, and I would take almost anything. If somebody was like, we got a job for $250, I'd be like, all right, like, I'll tell you, I can't spend 10 weeks on this.
I'm giving you 250.
But I'll take 250 right now, because a lot of those things I could just knock out in an afternoon.
Yeah.
And also I realized pretty quickly that, you know, $2,000 to me was not the same as $2,000 to a company that makes 20 million. And so because I think a lot of people, at least when it comes to like freelancers and like maybe people starting out their entrepreneur stuff, when somebody says, well, what do you charge? And you don't know, because like you don't want to go too high, because then you don't want to lose the job. Yep. But then you don't want to go too low, because you don't want it to make it not worth your time and effort and all that. And so I even to this day, I talk to people and they're like, well, how much would you charge for this? How much would you charge for that? But of all the times I ever like put out a bid or an estimate, I don't think anybody ever said no, which means it was probably too low. but I felt comfortable. I'd be like, you know, $3,000 for this video, but it was a lot of work. It wasn't like a one day shoot. It might be a 3-4 days. I'd have to go places and I'd have to edit, and it would take a long time.
Yeah.
And people would just be like, yeah, that's fine. And I'd be like, all right. But when one ended, and then you're like, oh, where do I get the next video? How do I make my next few thousand dollars? But I could string it together. But I also had like a part-time job on the side. I worked at a communications firm where I did about 10, 12 hours a week. And so that could like cover some stuff.
Yeah,
I knew for sure I had, you know, $1,000 in my account, you know, each week from this or whatever. And then on the side, I could do all the other video work.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
That makes sense. And then, how did you go from...
To the sheriff's office.
Yeah, office to Moog.
Good question. So after several years of just like doing all these jobs, at one point I got asked to work on some campaigns.
Yep.
And I got a phone call because at the time, Police Chief John Mina was going to run for Sheriff John Mina. And he needed a video to like kick off his campaign. So his right-hand woman, who's actually at the sheriff's office now, she was at the police department and she knew that I did video. And so she's like, John would be good at it. He can interview you. He can interview some other police chiefs, like a campaign kickoff video. So I was like, yeah, I'll do that. That's fine. And so I shot the video, I edited it, and it was ready for his like launch. And this was back in probably 2017. And it was fine. And, you know, I got paid for it and I kind of forgot about it. And then a few months passed and I think either he called me, John Mina or his campaign manager. And they said, hey, like, we really liked the video. We have a small staff. Like I need one more person to like go to events, take photos, shoot some more video, just like make sure he needs to go where he needs to be. And there's somebody there to like help set up. Like, I was like, I don't really want to do that. I told my wife and I was like, I don't want to get into politics. I don't want to do any of that. It sounds terrible. And she was just like, you need to do it. I was like, I don't really want to. She's like, it's a good opportunity. And they were going to pay me. It wasn't like a volunteer thing. And she's like, it's a good opportunity. I'm like, all right. And so I did, thankfully, because it worked out well. I still don't really like working on campaigns and stuff.
No.
But it was a good experience. I met a lot of people. I got to go to a ton of events. I shot video. I shot photos. Thankfully, he won his race twice. And I actually worked on another campaign after that because that guy needed help and he got elected mayor. So I was 2-for-2.
Wow.
And after that, I stopped doing it because I didn't like doing it.
Yeah, my political career, political campaign.
So when Police Chief Mina became Sheriff Mina, the woman I was talking about, she went over to become his head of communications. And I had sort of toyed with this idea of wanting to be a storyteller for a government agency. And that came about because the city of Detroit, this was probably 10 years ago, they hired a chief storyteller when things weren't so great in Detroit and they were trying to like boost the image of Detroit, because their argument was like, every time you think about our city, you think about murder, you think about drugs, you think about whatever. There's so much other stuff going on and nobody's telling those stories. Let's hire somebody to do that. So they had somebody doing that for years, and I don't think he does it anymore. He moved on, but I just thought it was a great idea for a city.
Yeah.
And that guy didn't really shoot much video. He just wrote stories. Yeah, which was fine.
Yeah.
But the idea was there. And so I had sort of pitched that to, her name's Michelle. I had pitched it to Michelle. I was like, I think it'd be a good thing for the sheriff's office to have. But with one little caveat, I actually pitched it to the city of Orlando first.
Okay, I was wondering if that's kind of where, I mean, because that same thing, the city of Orlando would.
You know. I had mentioned it to some people that I know that work at City Hall, and they sort of didn't
bite.
Yeah, they didn't think it was worth it, which is fine. And I think around that same time, they were hiring somebody to be like chief of communications for the city of Orlando. And I actually applied for that job and didn't get it because I didn't have any managerial experience at the time, which was more or less true. But anyway, here nor there. So they didn't want to do it, and which was fine. And so, but the sheriff's office did. And so when Michelle took this to Sheriff Mina, who I had worked alongside for almost 6 months, he was like, I love it. He's like, let's make this happen. And so it took a little bit because I had to get some approvals from some people, but eventually they hired me as their first chief storyteller at the Orange County Sheriff's Office. And before you ask your next question, the funniest part about that was I think about, there's 2,500 people that work there total. And I think probably 90% of them were like, this is the stupidest job. Like, why would you pay somebody to do this? But after I left, I think everybody appreciated it.
Well, and that's what I was going to say. I was going to say, what was the reaction to it? Because it's like, kind of like, well, what is he doing here? Uh-huh. What's he doing? I'm just trying to.
It's a good question. It's a legitimate question because, I mean, as I said, it's a very large agency. It's the largest law enforcement agency in Central Florida. Okay. 2,500 people, bigger than OPD, bigger than all these other departments, bigger than all the other county departments. Yeah. Orange County is the largest. And so you have a lot of people working there. Half are law enforcement sworn, what they say, and the other half are civilian, roughly. And so it was called the PIO office for a long time, but they changed it when Sheriff Mina took over to strategic communications. And the reason was not everything had to do with the media, because we wanted to do like our own stuff too. Not to say that they don't do a lot of stuff where they talk to, you know, Channel 9, Channel 6, Channel 2, but we wanted to do our own stuff. So when I came in, well, first off, they had to sort of like, as I said, I'm sure there was a lot of grumbling around the agency, like, who is this guy? What's he doing? What a stupid title. What is he going to read books to us? Is he going to tell us a story? And I'd get that all the time in the hallway, be like, why don't you tell me a story, storyteller? And the other thing is like, my salary was public record, so I'm not ashamed of any of that. Yeah. So when I started, I think my salary was, I want to say it was $75,000 a year. Which was more than I was making at WESH, more than I was making at the Sentinel. But I had also been doing this for like 12 years. I had experience. It wasn't just some guy off the street.
It wasn't,
And I knew what I was doing. So, but starting salary for a law enforcement officer is like $48,000 or $50,000. So it's considerably less.
Yeah.
So you got one guy who's out there with a gun and a badge, could possibly get shot at any time, making $50,000, and I'm making $75,000. With a camera, but to my credit, like, as I said, I had a lot of experience, and also I knew what I was doing, and I was pretty good at it. And so over time, as I started working with officers and deputies, and they sort of saw what I did, and then they saw like the final product, on Facebook, on YouTube, on TikTok, wherever, not TikTok, we weren't on TikTok, Twitter, they were like, oh, like that's why we pay that guy, because he's pretty good at what he does, and he makes us look pretty good too.
Was there ever something that you pitched, an idea that you pitched that they were like, yeah, no, we're not doing this?
The hardest thing, the best thing I ever pitched that where we did do it, and sometimes it took a little sort of wrangling, because like, you know, law enforcement is a certain way, and people who are in law enforcement are generally a certain way. And most of them don't really want the credit for what they do. I mean, there were some pretty heroic things that some people did. And I used to have to be like, we need to like we make something out of this. And they're like, no, it's cool. I'm like, you literally like jumped into that thing where that woman was dying in a car, and you jumped in that dirty pond where there's alligators, and you rescued her, and there's body cam footage, and you don't want me to do anything on it? No, it's cool. It's just like a Friday. I'm like, no, man. Cause like, if we don't tell anybody, it doesn't exist.
Exactly.
Yeah. And so there was a lot of like having to convince people like, you should be on camera. And I used to have a line where I'd say, look, we'll do the interview. Cause I'd always get, oh, I don't want to do it. I look stupid. I'm going to say something stupid. I'd be like, look, let's do the interview. I'll ask you questions. If you look dumb after it's all over, we never have to air any of this stuff. And that never happened. Because by the time I put it all together, put music with it, put B-roll over it, like, and I'd be like, think of your mom, think of your grandma. Like, she's going to see this and love it. And it was always that way. So those ones were a little bit tough to like get deputies to want to be on camera. That was always hard. One of the ideas I had was I wanted to show like how they catch like child predators.
Yeah.
And so, but there's like a
one
whole,
of those Chris Hansen.
Yeah,
type
exactly.
Stuff?
Like, how do they do that? Yeah. And it's like a whole operation.
Yeah.
And so it's not as simple as just like showing up. Like there's all these people that will, deputies who will chat with, I'll say men because it's always men. Yeah. They'll chat with them online for like days because it takes a while to have them meet you. I'll go back here a little bit. It's a little confusing, but if you're, so they do these things where they'll set up like an operation, they call it. And so they'll go into chat rooms and they'll talk to people about like, they'll pose as like a 12-year-old yeah. girl, and the person
create
on the other,
bait, yeah, yeah.
The person on the other side is like an adult man, and they're
acting
trying
as
to
probably
have
as
sex
a child,
with a,
yeah.
yeah, child. So, and you can't just be like, all right, let's meet, because they want to, they feel like they need to trust the person, mm-hmm. the adult person. So it can take time, and so in Florida, to my recollection, this is probably way more information than you wanted. To my recollection, it like there wasn't a crime if it was like two people talking on the internet. Okay. As disgusting as it sounds, it wasn't like a crime.
Okay, yeah, because they're just talking.
Yeah, it was when the adult person made a like physical attempt to meet the younger person
okay.
in person and traveled for it. That's when it became a felony.
Wow.
And so in order to do that, you have to say, hey, like, do you want to meet up? And then that person's like, yeah, I want to meet up. So anyway, I just wanted to show that we were doing this at the sheriff's office, that we were working hard to get those people around that, because
correct.
Like there's some things they do
yeah.
that are a little more secretive
correct.
And they just,
well, and you also obviously don't want to do that in case other people watch it then and be like, oh well, I got it now, you know,
kind of you'd think so, but right? I kept being told like they're not as intelligent,
they're not
as
that smart.
Or they're not really seeing this, or like even if we do this, they're still gonna
they're
want
still
to
going
meet
to.
Kids. So anyway,
wow,
so we had to like talk to the lieutenant, talk to the captain, like, we're not going to show this, we're not going to show that, we're not going to show exactly where we arrest them at, because they use like one of the same spots,
yeah,
because they know like what's around there, mm-hmm. So we had to get all these like approvals and but it sure enough it all worked out, like where they were doing their job and this one guy was like, yeah, I want to meet you. And so we had to like sit in a parking lot for like 2 hours because he hadn't got there yet, and then you know right when he showed up there was like 20 cops that just like stopped him and arrested him, and I don't know if he ever went to jail or not. I have no yeah. idea how the trial went, but those were some of the ones that I wanted to show, like, we're working on this. Like, this is what deputies do. Like, I know not everybody loves the police. Not everybody loves law enforcement. I totally get that.
Mm-hmm.
But I think most people can appreciate somebody who wants to get like a child sex
yeah.
predator off the street. And,
yeah.
and this is the work that it actually takes
yeah.
to do that. So, yeah. Your original question was like, did I ever not do something, right?
No, that's fine.
Okay.
That's fine. How did that lead from there to Mo?
Okay. All right. Good question.
So like Mo
good
reaching
question.
Out to you. And
so, so while I was at the sheriff's office, I still would shoot video on the side here and there just because I had weekends off. So I wanted to do that. And so at one point Mo reached out to me because he's a fan of Tom and Dan. And I think he saw that I did video there and he needed some video shot. This was years ago. This was probably about 2018 or 19. So it's been years. So he had just wanted some video shot and I quoted him a price just like everybody else.
Yeah.
Like, oh yeah, we could do that. And so he was like, I want to do law videos, but he didn't really have a great idea of what he wanted. So we came up with some ideas, and at the beginning, once again, they were terrible, but we shot them and they were good in a sense that nobody else was really doing that type of thing in Orlando. I mean, when you think of attorneys, especially personal injury attorneys, you generally think of a few here in Central Florida.
Yep.
But they're usually on TV. They're usually pretty in their suits and they're talking about your check and whatnot.
Yep.
And so Mo, if you don't know, just call Mo.com. If you follow him, he sort of takes a different approach at the whole legal thing. He's a great attorney. He knows the law like anybody, like,
yeah.
like better than anybody I know. But he also has a lot of fun and tries to stick out that way.
Yeah.
So when he needed somebody to shoot video, I was like, yeah, I'll do it. So we started doing a bunch of videos where he would just like walk and talk. So he'd talk about the law. We'd walk in neighborhoods. It'd be on a Steadicam. I'd put some funny clips in there, and those did pretty good. So over time, those just became more and more and more elaborate. So he'd be like, we should do this. We should do that. And like one time I had him dress up as the appliance direct guy, like for Halloween. Yeah. And then one time I had a barbershop quartet where all four of them are Mo. And so anything that we could kind of throw out that was fun and funny, he'd be like, yeah, let's do it. So over time we shot, you know, dozens and dozens and dozens of videos. And the whole time I was working at the sheriff's office during the week, and then I would just do that on the weekends.
Yeah.
But he would always ask, like, you know, you should just come work for me. I was like, nah, I'm good, man. Like, I like what I do. My job's great. I got good benefits. I do fine. And just, you know, every few months he'd be like, you know, you sure you don't want to like come work? No, I'm good, man. I'm good. I like shooting video for you. And so probably almost a year and a half ago, I was up in Michigan and I saw a lawyer ad on TV, and I thought it was kind of a good ad. And by this point, I'd known him for years. Yeah. And you know, we texted a lot. And I was like, this is kind of a good idea. Like, you should do this. And it was just like something where if some other attorney turned your case down, we'll take a second look at it. I was like, that's a good idea. So he's like, when I texted him that, he's like, you sure you don't want to just come work for me? And so once again, my wife was like, why don't you just like talk to him at least? Like, you don't have to take a job. Just like talk to him about it. All right. And at this, I'd been at the sheriff's office for like 4 years. So I'd done a lot by then. And so, yeah, I sat down with him. We talked about it. And I like told him what I wanted to do and what my job would be. And he's like, let's make it happen. So I left the sheriff's office, and now I've been at the DeWitt Law and Just Call Mo for about a year and a month so far.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
And you've done, tell people a little bit about some of the creative ideas, because I think for as a small bit, because I consider him, you know, kind of obviously he's a small business, but yeah, at the same
compared
time,
to some other
compared to some of the town. Other law firms. Mm-hmm. So can you talk a little bit about some of the things that you have come up with and done? Because like, obviously I'm proudly wearing one of your, you know, you've kind of got a wrestling theme, but I've seen everything from, you know, doing sponsoring things for, you know, kind of Solar Bears and sports stuff and kind of being at different events. So can you just talk a little bit about that? Just because of, I think as a small business owners are always trying to figure out ways of how they can stand out or what they can do to stand out.
Yeah.
So I'm kind of curious on like, what are some of the things that you've kind of talked with him on ideas or kind of steps that you guys have done to kind of stand out within amongst the group?
You know, I'd like to take credit for like a lot of the stuff that Mo's done, but I can't, cause like he did a lot of this stuff before I got there. So like we're talking about these shirts, they say Mo Mania on them and they look like Hulk Hogan.
Yeah.
And we've done another one that looks like an NWO shirt.
Yep.
And we don't just do wrestling stuff, but like it just happens to look good. And so, but a lot of that stuff really is Mo. Like he'll be like, oh, I want to do this. I want to do that. So he did a lot of that stuff before I got there. There was a lot of really cool branding stuff like magnets and mugs and stickers and just like everything. But my job has been to do some of that as well, like to come up with ideas. And we did a series of magnets for Halloween, and they all look like Mo's face, but they were like different horror movie characters. And we do all kinds of t-shirt giveaways, and we do a lot of events. So I'd say part of my job is taking the creative stuff that Mo wants to do and also like making it work. And what I mean by that is, it's easy to come up with ideas. Yeah. It's a little more of a challenge sometimes to make sure everything's in place. Cause like even these shirts, you know, if we have a shirt that we want to do, we got to find somebody to design it. We got to find a printer. We got to make sure it's on the website. We got to make sure it's getting sent to them. We got to shoot photos with somebody. Well, who are we going to shoot photos with? Mo looks great, but like, let's maybe find somebody else. Like I know Samantha from the Semantics podcast. She's been in one of these shirts. Let's get her to be in a shirt. So like some of that just takes a little bit more of somebody to do it. Whereas Mo has like, he has to, his job is to make sure the whole business is operating. The attorneys, the case managers, the paralegals, payroll, taxes, all that stuff. My job is just the marketing part. I say just, like there's a lot that we do because we have a videographer, we have content writer, we have web people. Like
it's not just you then.
I don't even hardly shoot video anymore because I have a person who does it. And like recently we just did like a video for a pizza cutter because like we have a merch item that's a pizza cutter with Mo's face on it. And Mo puts his face on everything. But we made it, I don't know if you saw this or not, but we made it like a infomercial from like the early 2000s where you're like cutting pizza and you don't know how to do it. But it was really, really funny. And so like those are the types of things that like we do that are much different than other attorneys in town.
Yeah.
But I mean, I probably have some say in some of it. Mo obviously has some say in it. So does Forrest, who does videos. So does Josh, who does some of our other marketing. So there's like a whole team of people, but then there's like the boring stuff. So that you see all the fun stuff on our Instagram, our Facebook. But then like when I first got there, when new clients came aboard, they would get like some information, but I didn't like how it looked. And so I wanted to like get it out in like a folder where like, here's what's going to happen when you get in an accident. Here's what's going to happen when you go to the doctor. Here's what's going to happen here. In like one presentable folder that you get mailed. Now that sounds boring. Like that's not cool. Like that's not TikTok. That's not Instagram. But like if I get in an accident and I don't know what's going to happen over the next 6 to 8 months and I get an email about it, that's fine. I might read the email. But not everybody likes it on email. So like we made like a really nice folder that's like printed and has his logos. And like everybody who gets signs up as a client gets that in the mail. Somebody had to write all that. Somebody had to design it. Somebody had to lay it out. Somebody had to find a printer. Somebody has to get them mailed to them. Somebody has to make sure their addresses are right. And so like there's all these processes that I think small businesses can do, but it takes somebody to do it. And if your job is to do a million things, sometimes it might take one person to be like, all right, this is important. Let's make sure this system works.
Correct. Or at least let's figure out a proper automated version
and
of it.
And he can't do it all. Like one person can't do it all. And like, you know, I joke about this at the sheriff's office too. I'd say like, well, how did you guys do this before I got here? Like, I just don't understand like how things operated. And I'm not putting anybody down, but like we just do so much now because there's somebody to just be like, okay, we need to do this today, this today, this today. And then when it comes to events, it's a whole nother ball game because we do a few events throughout the year and we're trying to do more. And it just takes somebody to organize all that. And it's not like you can just snap a finger and it happens. It takes like time and effort.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you guys also, obviously you're very smart in the sense of sponsoring, you know, on radio, podcasts, different things to kind of, spread the word out that way as well.
Mo's always been good with Real Radio because we get a lot of business from them. I mean, he's been sponsoring, especially the News Junkie, but Real Radio in general for probably 10, 15 years. He was a big fan of radio when he was younger.
Yeah.
And he still is. But I think some of that carries over. But also, like, those people who listen to that, they listen all day long. They don't just listen to a song and then click off. Like, they listen all day. So they hear our ads, and then if and when they get in car accidents, they call us, and they call us all the time, and they say, oh, I heard you on the News Junkie. I heard you on Tom and Dan. I heard you on whatever. So like it works for us. So the radio stuff, it does really good. Same with the podcast. Like we just get business from it. So we see value in it. And not all podcasts are created equal.
Correct.
And not all are, you know, they're not all as expensive as other ones, but
correct.
You know, I do like to say we try to make sure that we take care of people that are local because we're local.
Yeah.
And, you know, going back to some of these other attorneys that are in town, they might have offices here, but tell me how many times you've seen them around town, even in photos. Like, you know, I won't name names, but if you can probably picture a few in your head, like, do you actually see them anywhere ever? And I mean, I know some don't even live here. Like, they might have a house here.
They have a house,
but they don't live here.
Correct.
And Mo lives here. Mo lives in Maitland. He went to school in Winter Park. He he's from Florida. He's not going anywhere.
Yeah.
Whereas some of these other big attorneys, they don't live here. And so we try to, that's another reason we do a lot of like the podcast. And even we started this like series on chicken parmesan.
I saw that.
Where he goes and eats chicken parm. It's because we want to like highlight local stuff because we're local.
Yeah. No, I think it's a great idea. Mm-hmm. I also plan to hopefully have a chicken parm and get to meet Mo and have chicken parm with him in the future.
Yeah.
Because, you know, what better way for Deli Fresh Dreads or lunch with Biggie, you know, have lunch with Mo and be able to enjoy.
I think we can arrange that.
I think so. I think that'll be good. Do you still do one of the things that I loved even when you, because, and I think you kind of got it from when you were doing working with the Sentinel and doing Wesh, you for a little while you were doing something and I think it was on the side kind of thing, like the Orlando 60, where it was like your 60 second documentaries or storytelling. That's one of the things that I've always appreciated about you, in the sense that you've always been a fan of the small business, the small, like, you know, the small stories, not the big ones, but like the little things that people miss or don't see. Do you still do those, or is that a project that you still kind of, not that you have as much free time, but I know that you used to do a lot of that. And that's something that I wanted to bring up just because I appreciated it when you did them.
I get asked about that all the time.
Really?
Oh, all the time. And so I started doing that back in about 2017 maybe it was 2018. I don't remember. After I left WESH and I had a little more, I don't want to say free time. I just didn't have a 9-to-5 job. And so I had a little more flexibility, I'll say, with my schedule.
That's a good one.
And so the idea was to go, and this was even before TikTok. So there wasn't even real, probably Instagram.
No,
Reels.
None of that stuff was out there at the time.
And so the idea was to just go and shoot video and know that it was only going to be 60 seconds. So I knew I knew a time frame. I had to get it in 60 seconds. And so I would go find stories about just stuff in Orlando that I thought was interesting. And some of that stems, a lot of that stems from my time at the Sentinel, even at WESH, where I would try to go look for those stories. Cause if nobody was covering them, that means it gave me an opportunity to do it. And then I didn't have to compete with anybody either. Right. Because, you know, when the Amway Center was opening, everybody's going to do a story on that. So I don't have to do that. Or when a big chain restaurant comes into town, I don't have to do that. Or when Disney opens a new ride, that's fine. Everybody else is doing that. But when a small place on OBT has something interesting, nobody's doing anything on that. So let's go do something on that. Yeah. So there was a little bit of an audience there because just nobody else was covering it. And I just thought it felt like it needed it.
Yeah.
And so the idea was to just do 60 seconds, knock it out. You know your timeline, you know where it ends, you know where it starts, and you just got to fill in 60 seconds. Now, it's harder than it seems.
I was going to say editing-wise and cramming everything. Yeah, I was going to say there must be a lot of work in it. It's not like you're doing one take on your iPhone and you're just kind of walking around
doing
all that.
It was, I'd sit down and do an interview with somebody, and you know, they'd be 5 to 8 minute interviews, and then I would cut those down to 60 seconds, really more like 40 seconds because there's some gaps in there when you want to show stuff. So you really got to just say, look, Here's your, if you've ever edited video, here's your 8 minutes. I know I don't need these six. So let's say five. So five gone already. Don't need those. So now you got 3 minutes of talking, but now I got to get to 40 seconds. So now you start saying, okay, I probably don't need that. I probably don't need that. Probably don't need that. Now you're down to like a minute 30. Okay. So how do I go from this minute 30 to this 40 seconds?
Yeah.
And then you really start looking, I probably don't need that. I probably don't need that. And then you're like, okay, I have to have this. It's so good. I can't not. So then you can be like, all right, now I got my four clips. Now I just got to fill in the gaps with maybe a little text to give some context, maybe a little music, maybe a little B-roll, and we're good to go. So with all that said, they did take time to shoot and to edit and to put together. And so those 60 seconds would sometimes take me like 5-6 hours. Maybe more by the time I went there, shot it, came back, edited it, put it together, posted it. So, and then put captions on it. I could probably do it faster now, but they took time. And so it just got to be, it almost got to be like a job. Mm-hmm. And so when I did that, I ended up doing like 20 or 25 of them, which doesn't sound like a ton, but it was over time.
Yeah.
You know, I'd do one or two a month. And The first one did okay. The second one didn't do that great. And then the third one did like fantastic. And then like the fifth one did crazy good. And when I say that, it was like the first one was on a flower shop, I believe. And it did pretty good. It was just a place I'd passed for years in Paramore. And I just wanted to go in and talk to the lady. She was great. Second one was about a sign on OBT at the Fairville Omega store. I just thought it was funny. They put these like sexy signs up every day or every week.
Yeah, it was on their marquee.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah. But like, what's the story there? How do they come up with it? Where do they have the letters? And it was fun. I thought it was funny, but it didn't do that well. But then the third one was Nikki's place in Paramore. And that was actually the first place I went, but she just couldn't do it that day. And then that one did really, really good. People loved it. And then I did one about a car wash and a barbecue place.
And that one did
like crazy. That one had like 2-4 million views, which was a lot for a Facebook page that had like no followers. And then there were some other ones that were great that didn't do well. And sometimes things do good. Sometimes they don't. Yeah. But then eventually it just got to be more work than I had time to do.
Then it was worth it.
And now I'm probably not going to spend my Saturday and Sunday working when I have just a Saturday and Sunday.
Correct.
But I do get asked a lot, like, what happened to that? Can you do any more? I mean, I would give that to somebody. If somebody could do it and like do it right, I would just give them the Facebook page if they wanted it to keep it going. Yeah. But they'd have to be good at it though. I wouldn't just give it to anybody.
No, that makes sense.
That's and now with Instagram Reels and TikTok, I probably wouldn't be able to compete.
No. Well, I was going to say, I'm like, if anything, you could probably repost all of those on TikTok.
Yeah, it's a different feeling though, because mine are a different feel than like now it's generally... Brendan and I make fun. I make fun of this a lot. I always make fun of Brendan, like especially the food ones where it's kind of formulaic. Like I hate to say it. Maybe mine were too, but it's like walk into a restaurant, say that it's always like the same beginning where it's like, hey guys, I just found the greatest restaurant in Orlando. You'll never guess where it is. It's a hidden gem. It's Beefy King. I'll just be like, Brendan, Beefy King's been here for 55 years. It's not a hidden gem. Like, it's cool. I love Beefy King. Their sandwiches are great. Their tots are great. But it's not a hidden gem. Like, everybody knows
what Beefy King is. Everyone knows what Beefy
King
is.
But I've heard that on people's Instagram Reels. Yes,
it is very popular to see on Instagram Reels. Yeah,
and that's fine. And then those videos will get 100,000 views, and those people will have 100,000 followers. And
I'm with you, man.
Yeah.
I'm with you. I'm totally...
So it's hard for me to compete with that.
No.
Yeah. I can only show you so many... You know, boba teas and sandwiches
I would figure if you did, it would be more of like those, the hidden gems or the hidden stories of things like that. That's the reason why I was always kind of curious about it. What a few questions before, so we can wrap up my lunch break. What advice would you give someone for wanting to start something?
Kind of what I said earlier, like just first of all, start doing it, but then know that you're not going to be good at it at first. Probably it's going to take some time. I mean, I can only speak to certain things, but especially when it comes to video, like nobody's really great at it when they first start. Like it's going to take you time to understand like how to shoot it, how to edit it, what questions to ask people if you're going to do that kind of video, and just work at it and try and try and try and post and post and post. And sometimes things that I thought were amazing did terrible. Like they would just like, nobody would watch it. And I'd be like, this is so good. Like, this is one of the better ones I've ever done. And like the music's good. The video's good. There was one I did right before I left the sheriff's office. It did okay. But it was about a cold case about a woman whose body was found off of Orange Blossom Trail, kind of like up by Apopka in a wooded area like 30 years ago. They never solved it. They never identified the woman. They were trying to like use her genealogy to figure out maybe who she was, but they just never knew. But like we had all these photos from there, from like 30 years ago.
Yeah.
I went out there, I shot video, I interviewed detectives. Like it was good. I interviewed the detective who like originally did the case. Like, it was crazy. It was such a good video.
Yeah.
It did okay. It got, you know, a few thousand views and that was it. And then sometimes you do a video where you point a camera at something. Like I had one where it was two horses walking through a Krispy Kreme to get donuts, like mounted patrol. Yeah. And that video got like a million views. And it was literally me just pointing a camera at them. So like, I would say just don't get discouraged. Like the things that you think are great, they're still great. They just, not everybody clicked on them and shared them. But it was all just like practice for the next one too. Yeah, so just keep trying.
I love that. How can people follow you and support you? And because obviously we're going to be, all the information will be in the show notes, but as people are listening, where can people follow you on social media? And
for me,
like that?
I'm not as exciting as I used to be because I just have like a regular job now, but you can always follow me at John Busdecker. It's JonBusdecker on Facebook, on Instagram. I don't really do TikTok. I don't have time for it. I quit doing Twitter. So I post photos of stuff I do, but I do a lot of stuff now just for Mo, like call Mo and just call Mo or Facebook, because that's like, I'm behind the camera. I'm shooting photos. I'm really promoting that. So, follow that stuff, because we do all kinds of giveaways. We give away tickets to Solar Bears games because we're a sponsor of that. Mo gives away free pizza all the time because he'll be like, oh, it's Valentine's Day, let's give away pizza. It's like, all right. And so like he'll do that. And so just follow us because we do some really fun stuff around town.
What about Bungalower in the Bus?
Yeah. With Bungalower, you can always just go to bungalower.com. You can follow Bungalower in the Bus on Facebook, on Instagram. We need to do a better job of like telling people when to listen. It's funny. We'll go record places. Last night we were at Stefano's, which is up in Winter Springs, and there was a group next to us, and they're like, "Oh, how can we listen?" And I'm like, oh, we need to get like cards made. Cause like I've had this happen so many times. I'm like, well, go to Real Radio, go at 8 o'clock, listen, go 104.1. And I'll tell Brandon, I'm like, why don't we just get business cards made so we can just hand them that? He's like, oh yeah, we should do that. So, but you can always listen to Bungalow on the Bus. It's a podcast too. I think most people probably hear it as a podcast, on Apple or whatever.
Yeah.
But we have our dedicated fans on that one. I get people all the time that say, oh, you're Bungalow on the Bus, or they don't know my face,
but they know, I'll they say hear my your name, voice.
Or they'll hear my voice and be like, I know you from somewhere. Yeah, so I get that. But yeah, listen to that. We have a good time with it. And as I said, we have some pretty dedicated fans for that one.
No, I love it. Thank you so much, John, for being on. I have appreciated this time to be able to have a little lunch break, catch up with you, kind of share your story. You guys, I do love what both of you do. I plan to get Brendan on to talk a little bit about how he got the Bungalower going and all of that. But I definitely appreciate you being on the show today. Thank you. That's our show for today. If definitely, by all means, check out the show notes. Give John a follow. Listen to the podcast. If you need a lawyer, call Mo. If anything, go ahead and check out the show. If you subscribe, do everything like that. If you want to support me, check out my brand, Deli Fresh Threads, and tell your friends. Thank you. Until next time, keep eating sandwiches and follow your passion. Thanks, everyone.